We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? The regular season is over. You're listening to the Laker Film Room podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. Lakers go 47-35 after just a great performance against the New Orleans Pelicans. Really came out and handled their business. They clinched the eighth seed, and they will be staying in New Orleans. Mike, they told you guys to pack extra for just in case there was another game, and there was, as the Suns beat the Minnesota Timberwolves. OKC clinches the number one seed, Denver at number two, Minnesota number three, Lakers facing the Pelicans in the 7-8 game. And guys, this is what I was hoping for, to be able to get to this point where we've got two games to win one. What a wild regular season. We'll get into some of the game in a moment, Mike, but I got my glass of wine. You got a tall boy. Darius is straight edge, so he's dry over here. But end of the regular season, man. It's been a wild one, but we made it. When I was in junior high, I went to junior high like 35 minutes from where I lived. And I figured out at some point fairly early on, like, I can do most of my homework in the car on the way over there. And my mom would always be like, you're messing around, you're screwing around, you're not going to be able to get this done in time. And I would always, always finish it, Mike, right as we were pulling up to the school. That's what this season has felt like. They got one more to win to be able to get into the playoffs, but they are in a good position, one that's a little bit better than we thought they would be after they lost that game at Golden State. So talk to me, man. What are your feelings before we break down the game or anything like that? What are your feelings? This is what, your 13th season with the Lakers wrapping up? 16. Is it 16 now? Jeez. 16 seasons with the Lakers, 16, man.
Buddy. Yeah. Oh, wait. Well, first of all, when you said that thing about eighth grade or junior high, I can't remember exactly what happened in middle school, because I'm, you know, after my third kid, I think a certain part of my memory has just gone out of the, it's gone awry. But I used to finish my homework in between school and practice, whether it's soccer, baseball, or basketball. And I would just, so I would immediately sit down in whatever room and just like find like a half hour, try to get that all done so I'd get to practice and then not have it once I got home. So I totally appreciate that reference. I think where the Lakers are at right now, I'm thinking about this in the context of how much basketball has changed since 2008. You mentioned, Pete, the amount of years that I've been doing this. And in 2008, like if you got the one or the two seed, you're pretty good. You're in pretty good shape for the first couple rounds of the playoffs, usually. Time's done changed. Mm-hmm. That is different now. The seeding, like the seeding to me almost doesn't even matter in a way where, like, if I look at the number one seed is Oklahoma City, do I know for sure that they would beat the Lakers in a playoff series? Definitely not. How about Phoenix? No. How about Dallas? No. How about, so it's just things to me have evolved to the point, and I think a lot of it has to do with the depth of talent. And then because of the depth of talent, some of these younger teams with more energy and or like a Nikola Jokic type, right, that gives you a certain amount. Go ahead, Pete.
Oh, it almost feels like, Mike, it's more about the ability to sustain more than anything else.
Yeah. Yeah, right. To sustain and to bring a certain energy level. And so like OKC and Denver, they end up finishing with 57 wins. The Wolves blow a big opportunity for them to clinch the two seed. And that affects the Lakers potentially in certain ways, but still with 56 wins. And then, you know, the Lakers have 47. And I think when you, if you think about the Lakers and you're like, what's going on with the Lakers this year? They're fighting just to be the eight seed. Well, yeah, Darius, but they're 12 games over 500. 12 games over 500 is good. That's very good in an NBA season, especially when you have LeBron in year 21. And yes, the Lakers left some stuff on the table, but they're at the win total that I thought that they would be in. And you guys were close. Like, we were going back and forth. They were right around this area. And even though they didn't optimize things, I think they ended up getting a little bit more health out of LeBron and AD. And so, like, we'll get to the New Orleans game, but I'm just thinking about this more in the aspect of the league as a whole and how much things have changed from a seeding standpoint where, like, this is a very good basketball team that is not a typical eight seed or potentially seven seed if they win that game. And there isn't that big of a difference. In fact, there's probably no difference between the Lakers and the Clippers in terms of the four seed and the eight seed. In fact, I think the Lakers are a better basketball team. But that's what I think about when I think about this regular season and how much the NBA has changed since I came in 2008.
Just what a regular season.
I don't know, man. It's just like, I remember a few years ago too, Mike. Remember when every team in the West won like 50 games? It was like the top seven or top eight teams all won 50 games or were like 48 games was like the eight seed or something
or
like that.
2013 or 14 when Phoenix didn't make it, right? When they had like 49 mm-hmm. wins, yeah.
And the league is, I think, better overall now and is deeper now, but the West always seems like a gauntlet. I feel like every year it's always a challenge and there's always a bunched up number of teams that are vying for playoff positioning. I thought this year was crazy, honestly, for the 6, 7, 8, and 9 seeds and 10, really, 6 through 10, basically coming down to the final game of the season. And 1 through 3 all being decided on the final day of the season. It's like the only teams that were locked in were the Clippers and the Mavs. Everyone else still had something to play for, Pete. And it's like the Lakers continued to push. They continued to fight. I thought they played a spirited and concentrated and focused game today. I know we will get into that soon. It was a shift from what they showed in the Memphis game, but pretty much in line with what they've been doing for the last 2.5 weeks or so in order to get to this point. Pete, you sent us this tweet about the Lakers' last like 17 or 18 games where both LeBron and AD played and finished the game, basically, and how well the team had played in those games. And the Lakers have continued to push, and now they are eighth. And just like you said, it's the old school college basketball rule, right? They had three to make two. Well, they made their first one, and now they've got two to make one. I'm just, to a certain extent, grateful that LeBron and AD pushed the way that they pushed and were available to push the way that they pushed, because this team, way more than like looking back to the championship team where there were a lot of other like vets and voices in the locker room, this team needed LeBron and AD to be leaders.
Such a good point. Yeah.
And I thought LeBron and AD's leadership over the course of the season is what kept the team afloat through ups and downs. AD was talking about it before last game, I think, or maybe even after this game, Mike, where he was basically just talking about the ups and downs of the season, and they've had their highs and they definitely had their lows. And I'm sure long after the season is over, we'll revisit some of those lows. But right now, it's really a good spirited time for the team, Mike.
Well, just to kick this over to Pete, you know, we had talked about what this game was going to be beforehand. And to me, the main line, the top line item was LeBron. And if he's on Zion early and he's defending, just like in the in-season tournament game, he basically can break what the Pelicans are going to try to get done offensively. And then for LeBron to not only do that, but then to just completely desecrate them offensively, Pete. And this is what I want you to clarify, like exactly what he was doing, but he was just surgically tearing them up with passes. And so my seat in New Orleans, it's right on the baseline. So I am so close to the action that it's like, it's great from a feel perspective. it's not, I have to look down at the monitor though, to get more of like the overall perspective. So I got to watch the game back. So this is where I lean on you. So I can see it happening fast and then look down and kind of maybe get a replay, but I can't quite see the puppet master stuff, from a wider view that I know you probably did. And as Darius is texting our thread, by the way, you're like in the dark right now. So we can barely see.
Sorry,
you.
I got to turn on the light in here. Yeah, I got my wine.
No, it's fine. It's fine. But so 13 first half assists while taking Zion out of the game on the other end and basically just nullifying how New Orleans likes to play. Like, what was LeBron doing?
This MF-er sets career highs in year 21. Who does that? Right? Like, so the Pelicans have, that was a great win. I'm so excited where we're at because just before I get to the what LeBron was doing in that game, Mike, just this was kind of an aggravating season for me. I think this team is capable of great things. And so I will always view this regular season as being full of a lot of self-sabotage and a lot of sort of beating around the bush before they got to the thing that makes them really good. But the fact that we're here with the ability to win one of the next two to get into the playoffs is just a great situation to be in. And I think that in this game, they really flashed. We've talked so much about, oh, what could they be? Had they started Rui earlier, right? What could the Lakers be? But that has sort of this negative twist to it. Put a positive twist on that, like, what could they be? And this type of game is an example of that. So with LeBron specifically, one of my jobs with the Lakers is during the game, I got to watch the game. And if I see anything happening from the basketball perspective, I got to point that out in the game channel that we have in our Slack, right? And so early on, I'm like, LeBron AD pick and roll, you're going to see a whole ton of that against if Valanciunas is in the game. And Lakers went up 11-4. And 2 minutes and 57 seconds into the game, Willie Green called a timeout. And Valanciunas, I don't think, was seen again until the fourth quarter when they were just trying to throw things against the wall. Tons of LeBron AD pick and roll to start out. Rui amongst the best baseline cutters in the league at this point. And then you've got skip passes to shooters. When we came out in that third quarter, Lakers had a really good first half, up by 17 at halftime. Then I thought it was D'Lo and Austin who really put the game away in that third, both of whom I thought played really good two-way games. But from a distribution standpoint, D, the Lakers present several problems for the Pelicans, where I think that it's just a really good matchup for the Lakers. And then on the other end of the floor, and this is something that I was saying this recently on a pod, D, of like, I think our defense is more durable than our offenses. And that was a great example of a game that was kind of like that, right? Where I thought the personality of the Lakers was more through the defensive end. And I think that what's coming up with LeBron and AD in particular, they're our two most important defensive players. And they really showed up, and they to me are probably the worst defensive matchup in the league for Zion, in terms of you can't bully LeBron. You've got AD waiting at the rim, like Mike was saying. And so that to me, like, it's a good matchup for the Lakers, but I'm so relieved we're at this point, D. This was a very stressful season, but Lakers really have a shot.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to keep you stay fueled. They are ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. It's also flexible for your schedule. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, premium options with no cooking required. Head to factormeals.com/LakerFilm50 and use code LakerFilm50 to get 50% off. That's code LakerFilm50 at factormeals.com/LakerFilm50.
Mike, you were talking about what LeBron was doing on offense, and I'm going to punt that for one quick second just to talk about what he was doing on defense. Because to Pete's point, I thought the Lakers won this game on the strength of their defense in so many ways. And Zion was 4 for 13. He had 12 points. He had 4 turnovers. LeBron had 5 steals. I thought LeBron's ability to mirror Zion off of the dribble and basically absorb those hits that Zion wants to deliver and not get bounced back and blown off the court. And then AD always lurking behind. It turns Zion into a passer, Mike. And you had highlighted this in the preview for the game for 3 things. And just how well Zion's been playing lately. He's had a usage over 30. He's been averaging 25, 20, 26 points a night. He's been doing it efficiently. He absolutely trucked the Kings in a game that really helped the Lakers. And then he was a physical force against the Warriors. Now, I thought it was really the Pelicans' outside shooting with Trey Murphy and with CJ McCollum that really buried the Warriors. But Zion being in the middle of it all and even a couple of those buckets that he got late against Draymond, he's a focal point of everything they want to do. And it's based off of his physicality. And LeBron's the original Zion. He's the original, like, physical marvel that jumps out the gym, that is too strong for players his size and too quick for players who are bigger than him. The versatile forward who can handle the ball, create for others, just do everything. And that was sort of the promise of Zion. And Zion played so many games this year, and he's making those steps in his career. But LeBron continues to show that he's the prototype and he's the original. And he's the guy who, on the other side of the floor, defensively, he set the tone for this game. AD being on the back line, and I thought the guards were great, but I'd love to hear both of you sort of talk about how LeBron setting the tone on defense is what triggered the offense in order for the Lakers to go on the runs that they did, particularly that second quarter stretch where I thought, like, the Lakers outscored them 40 to 29. They turned a 6-point, like, that momentum, that Ingram 3 that cut it from 9 to 6, and it was just like, oh, the crowd. I'm sure, Mike, you were right there. The crowd was crazy. It was coming through the TV. They were so amped. And then that second unit came in, and they shut that off. And LeBron was a key part of that, too, along with the rest of the bench guys.
I just want to point out that cut it down to 4 because, once again, the refs missed that Torian Prince got fouled when he was in the bonus and had to be at the beginning of the second quarter like, well, what happened was...
They did get those 2 points, though. So, just... They had to correct themselves.
Just, who's paying attention to these games these days? Come on.
Well, I even... But so, of course, the big thing that was going around, and I wasn't aware of it until Darius sent it to me, but was the whole minute 9 seconds or whatever in the Memphis game.
That's what I'm saying. It's coming after that and, happened.
No, but I'm
then this
but I'm
happens.
Like,
nobody knows they're in the bonus. It takes so them 10 minutes to review things. Come on, man.
Hold on. So we get back to the hotel tonight and, we're hungry and we're like, where do you want to go, Stu? Stu's the general. Okay. We follow the general. Stu's like, I want to go to this specific burger place. So we go to the burger place and we're all sitting around the table and we're like, how did none of us notice this at the time? But just a minute. How did I not at least get like a text from one of my boys? How did none of us notice this? Anyway,
how did the announcer for the arena not notice? Because 2 times he said 2 minutes left. Because they always announce 2 minutes left.
So
he had to say that twice.
Oh, that's the ultimate one. Okay. Oh man. So I get to as you guys are kind of describing this game, it's actually making me think of my history as an NBA observer. And it's not as simple as sort of like a guy that can get downhill and finish at the rim versus like a shooter, but it gets partly the way to that, right? Like a child of Jordan, I grew up, Jordan had his pet jump shots, but ultimately the game on the line, this guy is putting his head down and he's going into the paint and he's finishing through traffic or getting a foul or whatever. And then I get to LA after some years of, of college and like watching the Timberwolves a lot more. And, but I get to LA. And so Kobe, who's got every trick in the bag, who can score from anywhere, when it got to be a tight game, I think one of the things we underestimate the most and think the least about with Kobe is how amazing he was as a finisher at the rim. with either hand, through contact, taking contact through, finishing all the way up over a defense, hitting a big. Like he ultimately could get to the rim and finish and create that contact, like in these kind of tight moments. And then, you know, the ultimate example I get is watching LeBron James in person in every single game that he's played, and just watching the way that he's going to manipulate a defense. And sure, let me try to get this guy the ball for a post up. Let me spray it around 13 assists in the first half. But ultimately, who on New Orleans is going to keep LeBron from getting downhill and getting to the rim? And then I think about Anthony Davis and how much of a deterrent he is, and how that's won the Lakers a ton of games, because other guys look up who are used to getting to the rim and like, oh, well, I can't do that tonight. And then I think about Zion Williamson, who you guys just described, who just beat the Warriors and the Kings because they have nobody that can keep him from doing that. Mm-hmm. But the Lakers do. And so the Lakers can get to the rim and finish. They can defend the rim and finish. I watch them get a title this way. The one team where that doesn't work against is Denver. And like, let's save that discussion for a little bit. Quick preview. Anybody that's saying the Lakers should try to duck them, no. That's not how we do things. It's not what the basketball guys are about.
Get out of here, Harrison Fagan.
No, that's a stupid
Anthony
take.
Irwin.
No.
Get out
terrible
of here.
Takes. Not, that's terrible. Not how things work. No.
Shame.
No. So let's get to that in a second. But like, this ultimately, this game is just about that. Like, both teams have guards that can create their own and hit threes and all that. But ultimately, this game was won at the paint in the rim. Lakers got 68 points in the paint. And they protected their own paint against a guy who was a monster of keeping out of the paint. Zion shoots like 60% from the field. He was 4-for-13 in this game. And all those shots came in the paint. So that's my soliloquy on like the way that I've seen basketball. And it's still the same in a lot of ways over the years.
This game is obviously going to get so much of the pub now. But go back a day or two. It was the anniversary of Kobe's 60-point game, his final game in the NBA on the 13th. And Lakers Social put out a bunch of great content around this, including just a little 48 or 52-second or minute and 10-second clip. Mike, when it was winning time, you know what Kobe did? He put his head down. He went to the basket. He hit that little floater that was high off of the glass. And it was even at that stage of his career, when it was time to get a big bucket in transition, he sort of just wheeled and dealed his way to the basket, attacked a big and got it up over the top of him for a key bucket. I just wanted to note that there, because I was just thinking about that. We saw so many of those buckets, of course, when he was in the younger part of his career. But even in the very last game, it was the same for him and that same approach, Pete. And that's what LeBron does. Even so, he did it against McCollum. He had that little post up and he took it hard to the basket. He did it against Memphis the other night when they were down and it was close. And so it's like, oh, are they going to lose this game? And I was sort of panicked. Oh my goodness, this is going to be the worst loss ever. And Stu and Billy Mack are on the call like, this is going to be the worst loss in the history of history. And it wasn't. And part of it was because LeBron did exactly that. And this game, Pete, I thought it was the defense first, but then, of course, it was the offense. And his ability to control a basketball game. What is the thing that we've been worried about, not worried about, but noticing most about LeBron's offense in terms of the negative side? It's been turnovers. Mm-hmm. It's been sort of that lack of care factor. There was no lack of care factor this game, Pete. He came out and he said, I understand exactly what I'm going to do here. To your point about the Valanciunas, the pick and roll, the stuff with AD, he was reading that five steps ahead. And mm-hmm. he knew exactly what he was going to do to get this dude off of the court. And guess what? When he goes to the bench, that's when the Pelicans have no rim protection at all. I love Larry Nance, but he is basically a power forward playing center. And it was in those Nance-based groups where they say, guess what we're doing now? We're not spamming the pick and roll anymore. We're spamming post-ups. We're spamming drives. We're spamming all of the secondary actions. We're going to slot cut. We're going to cut baseline with Rui. We're going to do all of the stuff inside the paint in order to get baskets. And it was just a masterclass from LeBron James offensively, in terms of, forget the numbers, for 13 assists first half, 17 for the game, all the efficiency with the points. AD missed like three shots all night. That sounds great, but that's the result, The process was the control. And LeBron controlled this game, and AD did too. And so I just want to make sure that we're framing it not just as, oh, well, this is what happened at the end. What happened was all of that process in order to get the team there.
All right, let's take another break, and then when we come back, Pete will attack Harrison and others for certain takes.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Pete?
I already did. It's like, look, this whole like lose on purpose thing, I blame the Philadelphia 76ers for this, for introducing this as a good idea, and it's never gotten anybody past the second round. Like, first of all, we shouldn't be talking about Denver right now. We got another game against the Pelicans, although I do agree with Derek Fisher's point in the postgame show, where he was like, that's almost like two wins, in that you had a really decisive win against a team where it was like, you sent a message to them that you cannot hang with us when we really bring what we've got. Now, Mike, you were very much on this point. To one of your first questions to everybody in postgame tonight was like, this is almost like a playoff series. And when you get that first win on the road, the second one is really hard. So talk to me about what everybody kind of said in response to that.
Yeah. So when I go in the locker room and I know that I'm going to interview everybody there, I try to think of some through lines, but I also don't want to ask everybody the same question because I think that can be a little boring and I want to hear what the answer is. But like, when you think about this circumstance, it's basically game one and game two on the road. And winning game one on the road, what it typically does is it gets the other team in a just frenzy of preparation and anger and motivation and all that. And this happened last year. The Lakers went into Memphis, popped them in game one. Right. That's Rui Hachimura hitting a million threes. It's Austin Reeves. I am him down the stretch. And then what happens in game two? Memphis comes out with their hair on fire and beats the Lakers. Same thing happens. The Lakers go into Golden State and they win game one. What happens in game two? Golden State, you get the A game. Okay. In game two. And you're going to get the A game from New Orleans on Tuesday. I think the thing that can sustain the Lakers, though, is that all of the advantages that we talked about and the lack of answers that New Orleans has, they can't go big with Valanciunas. They can't go small with Nance. Neither one of those things work. But if they just collectively play a lot harder and get every loose ball and hit more threes and the Lakers end up missing a couple of shots, or like, they could absolutely beat the Lakers by doing that. It's not going to be a game plan thing where like LeBron's going to be surprised by something that Willie Green whips out. From like, that's not going to happen. It's just an energy and it's an effort thing. So that, to me, that's what I asked several of the players. And I think that they, like, this is the good thing about having LeBron and even AD on your team. Like, they know all this, right? I'm more asking them to get the answer, to try and have the understanding more clear when people might be watching it on the postgame show. So they know, like, this is not and D'Angelo Russell, I thought, had a really good answer about this as well. So D'Lo was even a little bit, I think in a good way, chesty about it. And there are a couple players I know on New Orleans that were talking a little bit later in the game, like, okay, yeah, we'll see you on Tuesday. And D'Angelo's like, great. Like, I know what to do against you. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Give me your best punch, right? Like, you know, like, go ahead, Alvarado. You want to pick me up 94 feet? Cool. I'll go spot up in the corner, wait for LeBron to call somebody out and kick it to me and hit a wide open three over you. Like, so I think the Lakers have appropriate confidence in this, but they're also aware of the improve. Like, they don't expect, I don't think, to go up by what was the biggest lead in the first quarter, right? It was, they were up 10 early. And then, yeah, New Orleans ends up cutting it to four. And so it took them until that stint. They got back up by 15 on that D'Lo three right before AD returns. And then AD returns when they're up 13. But, like, I think they have appropriate fear of this, but there also is a confidence in the matchup from the Lakers in this circumstance.
So two things. Forgive me. I'm going to take it in a different direction. Prince was freaking great in that first shift that he did. We were cracking up because, Darius, you've been on this since early in the season. He cannot pass when he's on the move. And so you were like, Prince has been great in this shift. We were exchanging compliments. And then there's a play where Jackson was in a corner cutter type of situation. Prince drove to the basket and tried to kick it back to the corner from the side that he came from to nobody in particular. Jackson had cut to the basket. And we were like, all right, it downgraded from great to excellent at the very least. Yeah. And then I want to take back and beg for forgiveness about Gabe. I know that man does not score more than 2 points in a game for more than five games or so, but the real personality of this team and what this team is a defensive team where it has five or six guys that can get hot in any particular game. I can't tell you which ones they're going to get hot in. I think I've got a guess on which ones it might be, but they have several guys who can really have a game. And so to be a team that has AD kind of distorting things on the defensive end, and then have that much offense with the really good offensive system, that one of my regrets on the pod this year is bemoaning the lineups and not getting to the schematic stuff that they've gotten really good at to the degree that I think we could have. But it's got this high floor because of the system and the personnel on offense, but also it will go away from time to time, the offense. But I think defensively is where this team still really makes their money, because Anthony Davis being absolutely unbelievable on defense is still the most freakish thing about this roster. And so talk to me, D, just kind of how you see that and just the defense, the Lakers from a defense versus offense perspective.
We've praised AD all year, and I thought Mike asking AD about like games played and awards and AD just sort of shaking his head and basically being like, I can't even care about these anymore.
He was so annoyed.
Like, who knows what the hell goes into. Yeah. Yes. He was annoyed with Mike. He was annoyed.
Let me clarify what I was trying to accomplish here. I like my feeling. Okay. Take AD out of this for a second. I've been annoyed with the discussion around AD all season and the dismissal because of the Lakers' defensive rating, or because the Lakers were like the 9 seed instead of the 4 seed, when the 4 seed and the 9 seed are separated by like 4 losses, which is basically health, you know, and or circumstance. It does not matter. I hinted at this earlier in the podcast to the same degree. And so instead of AD being in this discussion all year, let's say the Lakers had a hot start. Like the Lakers, what they end up finishing? They won 11 of their final 14 games.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say they
start. Two of which AD missed, right? Like, yeah.
Two of which AD missed. So let's say the Lakers start like that. Then he's in the All-NBA. First team and the Defensive Player of the Year competition from the start. Just like Minnesota. Minnesota, and you guys know I'm from Minnesota. I root for Minnesota when they're not playing the Lakers. Like, I think they're going to lose their first round series. So, like, they are 56 and 26. Lakers are 47 and 35. I think the Lakers are a better team. But Rudy Gobert is going to win Defensive Player of the Year, because his team had a better start and because the Timberwolves were number one in defense for most of the year, and because Rudy Gobert anchors that, even though the real reason they are is because he has Jaden McDaniels and Anthony Edwards on the perimeter, and they come in with Kyle Anderson and Naz Reid, and they have size everywhere, and tough perimeter defenders. AD has carried four players who are offensive players in the starting lineup. And Jared Vanderbilt has barely played. Gabe Vincent has barely played. And if they had played a lot, as Pete just hinted at, if Gabe Vincent had played all year, the Lakers would be much higher in defensive rating. And if Jared Vanderbilt had played all year, they'd be much higher in defensive rating. And then does that make Anthony Davis a better defender? No. Every coach that I ask about AD is well aware of how amazing he is defensively. He is the best defensive player in the NBA. Wemby's coming, acknowledging that, but AD is better. And so I put this to AD this was like, whatever, 2 minutes. I put it to him in like 15 seconds, but like, hey, and that's what Darius was getting at.
The look in his eyes, it was cracking me up.
So I was going to say, we praise AD a lot, and he deserves the praise. And I'm glad that, Mike, you just went through all of that. But the guys I wanted to point to first, Pete, were actually Austin and D'Lo defensively. They have... So we talked about LeBron on defense. LeBron has sort of the biggest ask because Zion is an engine for their offense. Rui had a big ask tonight in terms of defending Brandon Ingram, but it was Ingram's first game back. And Ingram shot efficiently, but he sort of played in a silo a lot. He was on an island, and he sort of did his thing and got buckets for himself, but was not really a part of the flow. Austin and D'Lo have pretty big asks each night, especially Austin, right? So he had to defend. Well, he had to defend Will McCollum. And those guys got buckets. Like, McCollum got some buckets. Herb Jones got some threes against D'Lo. But, Pete, I thought Austin and D'Lo competed as hard, and especially D'Lo competed as hard defensively yes. as they had all season. I thought they had great game plan discipline. I thought they had great discipline within the context of what their individual responsibilities were, and then with the undertow of what their team responsibilities were as help players against Zion drives. Because even though LeBron was really laying off Zion, their responsibility is still to help in order to show the wall to make Zion a passer. There was a peel-off switch for a steal that D'Lo got where the Lakers switched and then D'Lo was a little bit late, but then he got there and he got that long arm up and he deflected the ball and then they got a steal. And I swear, Pete, I don't think I've seen D'Lo make that exact play all season. Honestly, like, now maybe it's happened a few times, but I just can't remember it. I've got pretty good recall though when it comes to plays that happen during the course of a basketball game, and I just can't remember that exact play. Now
let me test it. Who did Austin swat? Because he swatted, was it McCollum? He swatted somebody early on a similarly good play that I hadn't seen a lot of. And my recall is not letting me think about who it was.
Austin got a block on CJ McCollum on a step back jumper to the point where three possessions later, CJ took or tried to attempt another step back and Austin closed out again. And CJ had to make a release valve pass because he felt the pressure from Austin closing out on him. Now, again, I don't have perfect recall. I'm not LeBron James.
That's exactly what happened. I've actually always told people about this, about you specifically, like your ability to do that shit without actually watching the game again is unreal.
So I just thought, Pete, defensively, Austin and D'Lo being as locked in to what the team was doing, and you stack that on top of the sort of physical presence and rebounding that Rui was doing and what LeBron's ask was defensively and the rebounds that AD was getting. How many rebounds even came back to rim level before these guys were above the rim at the square, grabbing these balls off of the glass? And it's just like, oh, these dudes are ready to compete defensively. And that's why LeBron was probable this game rather than questionable.
I knew they were in trouble. That man's been questionable for 3 months. When he was probable on the injury report, I was like, oh, New Orleans might be in trouble tonight.
So he was ready. And I just thought that everyone on the defensive side came with a preparedness and a mental focus that was to a level that we probably have not seen since like the in-season tournament. Honestly, it was we are locked into what this game plan is. And this is why we will preview the game for Tuesday in another pod. But if the Lakers can lock in this exact way, they're going to be able to compete defensively
I think, even if their offense is not quite there. And the Lakers' offense did get going. D'Lo got hot. He hit 5 of his 10 threes. Austin was great today offensively. They had a lot of really strong offensive performances, but that should not overshadow what they did defensively, because I thought it was a defense to offense game for the Lakers. And that sort of turned the tables on what the Pelicans like to do, Pete.
No, I love that you've turned the attention to the defensive end, because that's something that in our preview and just the personality of this Lakers team, I think these Lakers are to be understood through a defensive lens and then adding the offense on top of that rather than the other way around. And D'Lo in particular, D'Lo to me is such a swing player for this Lakers team. He hit 5 out of 10 threes tonight, right? And that's something that can come and go. It's the nature of shooting. But D'Lo's not going to be faster than anyone or stronger than anyone or jump higher than anybody in the playoffs, but he can be smarter than them. And there were several defensive plays in this game where I thought he was smarter than the guy across from him. One of the drills that you run if you're teaching ball pressure and things like that is you want to turn your man. That's what you tell your defender. Turn your man, which means if a defender is dribbling to their right, you want to cut them off and beat them to the spot and then make them go to their left, right? Doesn't mean steal the ball or anything like that, but it means make them change direction. And that is something that D'Lo did at several points to kind of weaker ball handlers. There are guys that there's the sort of the two different schools of thought in terms of you're either shooters or you're rangy wings. And so teams like the Pelicans are very much full of rangy wing types that those guys don't always have a lot of ball handling. And so, you know, that's something that you can attack if you're the other team. And so D'Lo was turning guys on several circumstances where he did not end up getting the steal, but he ended up turning a weaker ball handler into a ball handling turnover where they're turning him right into LeBron, the guy that got 5 steals. And when you're doing that on the perimeter and you've got LeBron James and Anthony Davis behind you, that's part of the reason why I'm like, steals and blocks are actually really important stats on this Lakers team this year, because if you can do that, you can get out into transition. D'Lo's all of a sudden hitting them pull-up threes, right? And so D'Lo, we're really going to go as far as D'Lo can help take us. So we'll wrap up here. Next pod, we will be previewing the play-in game against the Pelicans. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
James has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound to Vlade. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his 8th block. An NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance,
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a 3-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. 2-1.
Miss it.
Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant. Yes.
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.